Case number 08-5398, Del Monte Fresh Produce Company et al., appellants versus United States of America et al. Mr. Jarko for the appellants, Ms. Desgupta for the appellees.
May it please the court, Daniel Jarko for the Del Monte appellants. I'd respectfully request reserving 3 minutes for rebuttal. The crux of this case is the question whether the party's controversy over a single export license is capable of repetition yet evading review and therefore justiciable. The threshold issue that divides the parties is how to define exactly what it is that must be repeatable to satisfy the...
You understand that that is an exception, a very narrow exception to a broad general rule.
Yes, right. Your Honor.
And I suppose, in theory, almost anything could be repeated. So you have to have something more than that. In this case, what exactly could the court do on this complaint when the facts have been fulfilled to the point they had here? You're suing for a license. You had the license before you ever walked into the courthouse. What else could the court have done?
Your Honor, the court...
Take its finger at the government and say, naughty, 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 don't do that again? Or?
Well, Your Honor, with respect, the declaratory judgment that is the remedy that's requested by Del Monte would define the rights of the parties.
Do you think this court should write a precedent that in administrative law, when the government has already acted in the underlying proceedings, the court is going to start hearing cases, or allowing the district court to hear cases, just to issue declaratory judgments about what should have been done in the administrative proceedings?
Your Honor, we don't see any meaningful distinction between this case and the Ku Klux Klan case that
Hey, truth, counsel, I've had a hard time finding a distinguishable parallel. You say you don't see any distinction. I don't see a lot of similarity.
Your Honor, in that case, the court went back and ruled on the exact facts that had occurred on a march that was over and the exact issues that had confronted past events in order to resolve the First Amendment question presented that...
You don't have a First Amendment question. You have an administrative law question about the issuance of a license, right?
That's correct, Your Honor, but I'm not aware of any...
You had the license before you ever filed the lawsuit even, right? I know you probably didn't have perhaps notice in time, but you had the license.
Well, we did not have the license, Your Honor, and we have no way of knowing.
You had it when you got to the courthouse, didn't you?
Excuse me, Your
Honor? You had it when you came to hearing, didn't you?
We did not. We had
it. Before this judgment was entered, you had had the license for some time, right?
That's correct, Your Honor. We did not have the license when we filed the complaint or moved for the preliminary injunction. We did have the license by the time the motion to dismiss was adjudicated.
What date was the license issued?
It was issued the day after the complaint was filed, Your Honor. And the adjudication of past facts is exactly what the court did in the Ku Klux Klan case. We do not have a First Amendment issue here, but I'm not aware of any distinction in the mootness case law that makes whether a case is moot contingent upon the legal issue.
We're going to have to hear this case. Why couldn't every license applicant who doesn't get his license as fast as he thinks he ought to cause the court to have to hear proceedings declaring he didn't get his license as soon as he should have? I mean, maybe the court might not rule with him, but wouldn't it be as much of a controversy in any licensing case ever as it is in this?
Your Honor, here we have a repetitive controversy. We've had two annual lawsuits filed, one right after the other.
Why isn't that in your complaint?
Yeah, that's not in your complaint, is it?
Clark tells us that we have to look to the relief sought in your complaint, and that's not in your complaint or your amended complaint. You say nothing about that.
Your Honor, we say in our amended complaint that it's about a single license and right. that it is likely to be repeated in the future. The particular facts that explain why it's likely to be proceeded in the future, to be repeated in the future.
Where do you say it's likely to be repeated in the future?
That's paragraph 33.
Okay.
Right. We say there's a reasonable expectation that Del Monte will be subject to the same inaction by OFAC again in the future with respect to future license application.
In reviewing this complaint, how does the court know that that is any more likely than in any other complaint where somebody wanted to allege a conclusion? That's a conclusion.
Your Honor, not
an allegation of fact. This is Twombly wrote large that there's no allegation of fact there. That's a conclusion.
Your Honor, at the time that the amended complaint was filed, the government had not moved to dismiss on mootness grounds. And the facts relating to mootness, which are a jurisdictional question, were fleshed out later on. They were provided through declarations and so on in response to the motion
right.
to dismiss.
And Clark says we begin with the complaint, and KKK says the Supreme Court has said we can look beyond the complaint to statements by counsel, to declarations, et cetera. Let me ask you, though, the Chief Judge's, following up on the Chief Judge's question, what is it about the administrative law area that would make this exception to mootness apply differently?
I don't believe there is anything about the administrative law area that I'm not aware of any.
In the KKK case, it wasn't technically an administrative law case, but the KKK was trying to get a permit, i.e., trying to get a license to march. And they got what I'll call part of their license. They didn't get the whole license. And the court nevertheless said, well, even though it's not in the complaint, and even though counsel only says they may march again, we're going to apply this exception. And we repeated that in our PETA case, that was the standard we were to apply. Now, whether you can prevail or not is not before us, as your brief says. It's just the question of whether this exception applies. So I just need to be clear. I mean, have you found anything distinguishing either Supreme Court or other circuits distinguishing this exception in the administrative law context?
I have not, Your Honor, and the government has cited us to none.
Tell me right now, and feel free to go outside the record, what is it that should make the court think that this is likely to recur between the government and Del Monte?
The past history, Your Honor, the history that is in the record.
What is the past history? Don't give me a characterization. Tell me exactly what the evidence would be that should make the court think this is likely to recur between the government and Del Monte.
Well, the plaintiff's theory on the merits is that there is a 9-day statutory deadline that has to be followed. There are 5 examples of not meeting that deadline that occurred before the example in this case. We respectfully submit that the past history suggests that it will recur in the future. We also point to the fact that the government has announced in the Federal Register that it's not likely to respect those deadlines in the future. That in and of itself suggests that it's likely to recur. We don't really think that the government, in the government's briefs, they have not even claimed that if the issue is framed the way we framed it, that it's not likely to recur. They simply say that the issue should be framed differently such that recurrence is impossible.
Well, I would point to your business plan, wouldn't you? These are one-year...
I don't question what makes us think they're going to try to get licenses again. I'm questioning whether there's anything to make us think the government's going to commit this same wrong again.
It's because until the lawsuit was filed, every time we filed for a license, they violated the deadline.
Isn't Treasury's policy or practice to take much more time than 9 to 11 days?
That's what they've announced.
A fundamental difference over what law applies here, right?
That's what they've announced in the Federal Register, Your Honor.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Counsel. We'll hear from the government.
May it please the court, my name is Anisha Dasgupta, and with me at council table is Douglas Letter, and we're here today on behalf of the United States.
We know who he is.
Thank you, Your Honor. We wanted to start out by addressing Judge Rogers' question, what is it about the APA context that's difficult? Because I think that gets precisely to what's at the heart of this case. And that is that this court observed in Center for Auto Safety that APA 706, which is the cause of action Del Monte is bringing here, is expressly limited to the terms laid out in that statutory provision. And one of those limits, as the Supreme Court observed in Norton versus Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance, and this court observed in Cobell versus Norton, is that a litigant who's bringing a 706-1 challenge can only be challenging a discrete agency action. So Del Monte...
It can only be a discrete agency action that occurs once. I just need to be clear about that.
In this case, Del Monte is challenging a discrete agency action that
on
its...
What I'm trying to understand is, I know there's this language in the cases, but there is this exception to the mootness doctrine. And I just want to see how these two lines of authority fit together.
Well, I think Judge Sentel pointed that out in his question to opposing counsel, you know, why the Ku Klux Klan case is different. So
why is it different? I mean, you could look at the parade permit as the same thing as asking for a license to march. And the court says, because we're going outside the complaint, we're even going beyond what counsel has suggested. And we're going to conclude that it's reasonable to expect that the Klan will be back and will want to march. And so we're saying this case isn't moot.
Well, the key point there is that the plaintiff was bringing that claim under a broad cause of action that allowed its specific claim to be read broadly. So Del Monte cites a number of cases in their brief where the exception for actions capable of repetition has been applied to discrete agency actions. And the government is by no means challenging that this is the case.
So under a 706 action, if the allegation is the agency acted contrary to law, and I just want to be clear, you're saying that this exception to mootness is inapplicable.
No, Your Honor. The type of 706 action that you've just adverted to would be an action under 706-2, which isn't constrained in the same way as an action under 706-1. That this court and the Supreme Court have
acted contrary to law because they unreasonably delayed granting my application for a license. That's the allegation.
Well, I think in that case, the cause of action would be somewhat ambiguous, and to understand the specific claim that the plaintiff was bringing, we would have to look at the pleadings and look at the cause of action.
No, but isn't that the argument that's being made here? That's what I need to understand. They're saying that the agency's action was unlawful because they unreasonably delayed acting on this application for a license.
Well, that's certainly the claim that they made in response to the government's motion to dismiss. When they originally brought the suit, all they were seeking was agency action on their application.
KKK and PETA say it's okay, and the Supreme Court has said it's okay to look at all those things. We start with a complaint, but we don't stop there.
That's correct, Your Honor, but in this case, the complaint represents the only legally appropriate construction of the claim. So in KKK, in trying to understand the specific claim that the plaintiff was bringing, the court looked beyond the complaint. And this court is certainly free to look beyond the factual allegations in the complaint, but Del Monte is constrained by the cause of action that it chose to bring. Now, the government...
Why doesn't paragraph 33 of their amended complaint dispose of your argument there? They will continue to apply for licenses in the future, and there's a reasonable expectation they'll be subject to the same inaction. Why haven't they?
And while you're in that one, address the effect of the Federal Registry publication to which counsel alluded concerning the time limits involved.
Of course, Your Honor. First of all, The issue of the Federal Register publication goes to the merits of this suit. And so the only question before this court on appeal is mootness. So in order for the Federal Register publication or OFAC's general policies to be at issue, Del Monte would be bringing a broader challenge than the challenge to the discrete agency action. And we know that's not so.
I realize I'm leading you away from Judge Griffith's question, but you can get back there. But counsel offered that for the purpose of showing the reasonable likelihood of recurrence of this particular wrong. He's not opening the dispute to challenge that language itself as such. He's saying that is something we should look to in order to conclude that there is a likelihood of recurrence.
Well, but the government would contend that counsel is simply constrained by the cause of action he chose to bring. He was put on notice when
the
government...
That's your best answer on that?
Excuse me, Your Honor?
That's your best answer on that?
Well, our answer to that would be twofold. It would be first that he's constrained by the cause of action that he chose to bring, and second, that as Your Honor pointed out, that is a conclusory statement, and it's not an allegation. I think.
Go ahead and go back to Judge Griffith's question.
Well,
if you want to rephrase it? I'm sorry.
Yeah. So I think one of the issues that Your Honor is getting to is what kind of harm was Del Monte alleging when it brought this suit, and how does that help us understand the issues and wrongs at the heart of this suit? Because that's really the crux of the mootness inquiry. What are the issues or wrongs being challenged? And Del Monte, in fleshing out the nature of its injury, has represented at every stage up to its reply brief that the injury it would suffer involved the inability to undertake certain business transactions in December or by December. And the allegations that counsel is asking the court to incorporate into his complaint, you know, specific claims about whether or not Del Monte would be subject to this in the future aren't fully contained in the complaint. And if the government is permitted to accept Chief Judge Santel's invitation to go beyond the record, just the way opposing counsel was asked to go beyond the record, Del Monte actually has filed subsequent license applications, and those have been granted in a manner that it deems satisfactory. And that's not due in any way to the fact that it brought the suit. It's due to the operation of a particular exception to the license review that OFAC applies. So Del Monte is unable to show, regardless of OFAC's policies, that this is something that would recur even if it were at issue. So
let me just be clear about this. Suppose a statute said the agency must act on licenses within 30 days of receiving the application. The application is filed. The agency takes 181 days. And this happens 3 or 4 years. And we're talking about a one-year license. So in 2007, whereas Del Monte was, they file a complaint because the agency hasn't told them why they haven't issued the license within 30 days. And a few days or the day after the complaint is filed, the license is issued. This is a commercial operation. They plan to do this year in, year out. And obviously, getting something at the end of December when you need to contract by, getting a license by the end of November when you need to contract by the end of December may not be the most efficient way for the corporation to proceed. So it seeks a declaratory judgment from the court that under the statute, the agency has to issue the license within 30 days after it receives the application. Now, what I need to understand is why this exception to mootness doesn't apply in those circumstances, regardless of whether, if Del Monte were to proceed to prevail, they have any more than, you know, a piece of paper that they can show to the agency the next time around saying that, look, you have to go forward within 30 days. That's what I'm not understanding. I'm not getting into the merits here as to whether they can get this declaratory judgment or not. For a number of reasons that you make in your brief. But I'm just wondering at this threshold stage where they say there's a statutory requirement, the agency is not complying with it, we have evidence they haven't complied with it in the past, you know, we're a commercial operation, we want to get this agency moving in accordance with what Congress had in mind. So we want this judgment. Why isn't that what capable of repetition yet evading review is talking about?
I see my time has expired. My answer?
Well, as long as we're asking questions, you have to answer.
Thank you,
my colleagues are rather bored with hearing me say this, but the late Spotswood Robinson of this court used to say those lights only control the bar. Only God can control this bench. So understand that as long as we're asking you questions, you don't get to sit down. You have to keep answering.
Okay, Your Honor. Thank you. So there are two things about the questions you've asked. One is that the question you asked is somewhat of a hypothetical because
it is a hypothetical.
Yes. Well, so it includes one important aspect that's different from this particular case, and that's when you said that it's not just the transactions, it's an ongoing disruption to business. And I think what's critical in this case is that Del Monte never alleged that. It didn't allege that.
But in the KKK, all the attorney for the KKK said to the court was, we may come back and want to parade. You know, it didn't say we have a plan to come back, that we expect to come back. We may come back. And the court says, look, you know, reasonably, you know, this is an organization that wants to express its views. It's likely to come back to the nation's capital and want to do so. Here, this is a business. This is a corporation. It's been selling food, you know, exporting food. That's part of its business. And it says it has a business plan to continue doing so. I mean, I don't think we're taking a leap of faith here. Indeed, I think we're taking less of a leap of faith, arguably, than in the KKK case. That's what I'm not clear about here.
But under that scenario, the court would be construing the claim in a way that's inconsistent with the cause of action that Del Monte chose to bring. So in the KKK case, the court was free to read a broader challenge about policy into the specific claim because the cause of action was a very broad cause of action under the First Amendment. In this case, this court has observed and is bound by its precedent in that observation.
So in other words, in order to come within the exception, Del Monte would have to challenge the policies. It couldn't simply say that the agency is required by Congress to issue the license in 30 days?
Well, Your Honor, that statement the government would understand as a broader attack to the way that the agency is administering the program. To say that the agency is required to grant something within a specific number of days is to say that by having a policy of not doing so, the agency is administering the program in a manner that's contrary to law. That is a cognizable legal claim, but it's a legal claim under 706(2). I think the thing to bear in mind is that Del Monte is a sophisticated entity represented by professional and experienced counsel who chose to litigate
this. Well, it hasn't been able to get this agency to meet with it or answer its telephone calls or anything, no matter how sophisticated it is, according to the record before us.
Well, not answer the telephone calls. There is a help desk.
Meet with them. That's in the record, counsel. Any event, okay, I get your argument.
May I follow up? You've used repeatedly the phrase to look to the cause of action as that's limiting. Where does that idea come from?
Well, that comes from this court's case law in saying that. So, for example, in Clark versus
Clark's your best case.
No, Clark isn't the government's best case, but in Clark and PETA and all of these cases, in determining what is at issue in the mootness inquiry, the court begins with the complaint. Ku Klux Klan, perhaps in practice, stands for the policy that the complaint, the four corners of the complaint may not limit it. But we're constrained, I believe, by the Supreme Court's observation that this cause of action can only be used in a particular way.
Let me ask you to respond to this reading of our cases. What do you say to the idea that if you look at the cases in toto, that what appears to be going on is in each of the cases, the court is undertaking a fundamental inquiry, and that is this dispute likely to come before us again? And in the PETA case, so fact-specific, didn't look like there was going to be another instance for PETA to have an opportunity to protest in this sort of fashion. So therefore, it's moot. In the KKK case, despite not having alleged this in the complaint, the court looked at it and used reason to say, you know, it's probably the case that the KKK is going to be back asking for marching permits. They've done it for, you know, 80, 90 years or so. Under that reasoning, We know Del Monte is good. Del Monte's not going to go out of business. They're going to keep trying to export goods to Iran. Why, under that reasoning, don't we know that, in fact, Del Monte is going to be back in front of this agency, and that's a live controversy before us because the agency has a much different view of what the time limits are than does Del Monte?
Well, we might know that, Your Honor, but that's not the specific question before the court right now. As Your Honor said previously, the question is, what's at issue in this specific case? And the government is merely saying that in order to understand what's at issue...
Why doesn't paragraph 33 tell us that what's at specific issue in this case is a likelihood that this will be repeated and continue?
Well, because the Supreme Court's observation in Norton versus Sua says that this action can't stand for anything that broad. Del Monte is limited by the cause of action that it chose to bring, so when this court tries to understand what's at issue in this case, this court is bounded by the legally permissible construction of this suit.
Any further questions? Seeing none, thank you, counsel. How much time does petitioner have, or appellant have? Yeah, we're going to round you up to 2 minutes for rebuttal, counsel. We're feeling especially generous today.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to start, if I may, with this question of Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance and the limitation of the merits to a discrete agency action. We have no dispute about that, but we respectfully suggest that the government is mixing up the merits with a jurisdictional question. It doesn't broaden the scope of the legal claim that we are bringing to take that discrete legal claim and add additional jurisdictional facts to prove that it's likely to recur in the future. And in that sense, the narrowness of this claim is no different than the narrowness of the KKK case or the PETA case, which also involve a single discrete permit application. While there were lofty First Amendment issues at issue in those cases, in a sense, the scope of all three cases is exactly the same.
Do you want to be like the PETA case?
I'm sorry?
Do you want to be like the PETA case?
Your Honor, we don't want the same result.
Okay.
But we would respectfully suggest that the framework that the court followed in those two cases applies equally well here.
No, but I hear the government's argument as a sort of a different argument, and I have to think about it. I mean, they made it in their brief that, you know, because this is a 706 claim, you can't focus beyond the discrete act. And the discrete act here is the issuance of the 2007 license.
And Your Honor, my point is that we can't focus beyond that for purposes of the merits of the mm-hmm. case. And if this goes back to the district court, mm-hmm. that would be the focus of the remedy. But the question on this jurisdictional mootness question is, what facts can the court consider to determine whether that discrete event is going to be repeated in the future? And there's no limitation on that. We would also remind the court of the City of Houston case, which expressly stated that a declaratory judgment with respect to a discrete agency action is something that is subject to the doctrine of mm-hmm. capable of repetition yet evading review.
Unless my colleagues have further questions, your time is up this time, and we will say the case is submitted. You may give us a recess, counsel. Thank you.